Good evening, everyone. Evening. Why don't we turn and say hello to the person next to you and ask them for me, what is their favorite kind of story? If they could read any, whether it be romance or drama or murder mystery, what is their favorite kind of story? Go ahead and do that for me. Thank you. Great, thank you very much. So I'm not sure what your favorite would be. Let me tell you about my favorite. If a story has got some excellent, brave, strong, sword-wielding, horse-riding hero in it, then I generally like it. If it's got battles that have to be fought against evil kings and beautiful princesses to be rescued and thrones to be contested, then that's my kind of story. These are the kind of films I like to watch or stories I like to read. And as a result of that, 1 and 2 Samuel has everything that I look for in a great story. I'm not sure if you've read it before, but there is just everything, and there's all the makings of an epic Hollywood movie. There's a kidnappings and assassinations and betrayal and scheming and affairs, and there's lead characters who you're just warming up to, and you're just getting attached to them, and then they get killed off with no warning at all. And as a result of that, 1 and 2 Samuel, I find to be a really gripping, exciting story. But beyond that, on top of that, and more importantly than that, that over the last few weeks we've looked at 1 Samuel and we've seen not only is an exciting story, but it's a story through which we can see a huge amount about the character of God. We can understand a lot about the character of God and his relationship with us. Another thing we see in the stories of 1 and 2 Samuel are great characters. There's no two-dimensional, rubbishy characters. They're all deep, genuine, complex characters who have virtues and vices. We have villains who have quite good streaks to them. We have heroes, people that we respect in the story, who also have these kind of darker sides to them as well. We've looked at Hannah, who prayed for a son and was remembered by God. We've looked at Samuel, who had faith that God was faithful and would provide for their future. We've looked at the people at whom Samuel was working, had oversight over, and we saw that the people didn't have the same faith in God, and so they wanted to elect a king who would come and be a king over them like the other nations had. And we looked at Saul, the king that they chose, and the fact that he had a lot of good attributes, he had a lot of good things about him, but the most important thing of his heart not being after the same as God, not having a heart like God's, that wasn't there. We've also looked at God. We've explored the fact that where we focus on the outward appearance, God focuses on the heart. And last week, we looked at David, the character of David, and we saw that although he had all these different voices telling him to compromise, telling him not to do something, he listened only to the voice of God, and he obeyed only God. There's so much written about David that actually next week we're going to be focusing on David again, and Jonathan Davies going to come and speak to us more about David. But this week we're going to focus on one of the most significant characters in the book, but I think one of the most overlooked characters in the story. We're going to be focusing on the character of Jonathan. I don't know how much you know about Jonathan, but Jonathan was Saul's oldest son. He was the heir to the throne. He commanded a third of the army and had won some incredible victories in battle. Everyone loved Jonathan. In fact, at one point, he disobeyed one of the commands of his father without knowing it, and the king was going to execute him. And the people rose up and they said, "Don't touch Jonathan, because we love him." They respected him. They wanted the best for him. The people saved him from that. He had an incredible amount of faith in God. You see that he attacked a garrison just by himself. Him and his armor bearer attacked a garrison with, I think, about 20 or 25 people in it. And he turned to his armor bearer and he said, "I know it's just you and me, but God doesn't need a big army for a victory. He says, nothing can hinder God from winning, whether he has many or he has few. And we see that the friendship that Jonathan and David have is one of the most incredible records of friendship found anywhere in Scripture. Tonight we're going to look briefly at the importance of Christian friendship, and we're going to focus on what we can learn from Jonathan about what a God-glorifying friendship can look like. Is that okay? Great. By friendship, I don't mean just general acquaintances. I don't mean what lots of other people mean by friendship. I don't mean your Facebook friends. I'm talking about real, genuine friendships. And those are hard to come by, I think, today. As so many people are lonely, as friendships become less and less common, we're talking about a real, genuine friendship. Proverbs 18 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. He's saying you have lots of different companions, lots of different people in your life, and you will still come to ruin. But if you have a true friend, then it makes all the difference. A friend that sticks closer than a brother. In this church, I like to believe that we're quite big on friendship. Our vision as a church is to be a spirit-filled and empowered witnessing community. And I think that word community is actually vital. One of the reasons that some people struggle in their spiritual life is because they try to do it in isolation. They haven't allowed other Christians to come close and to support them. Even when they come to church, they're coming to services, they're coming to events, but they're not actually making real relationships. They're coming and then they're going, and the people that they go to church with are just general casual acquaintances. On the other hand, you see some people who come to faith and quickly grow and deepen and mature in their faith because of the great relationships that they're able to build up with other Christians. The name Jonathan means a gift of God. And to have a friendship like the one we're going to look at tonight, to have that kind of friendship, I believe is a great gift from God. We're going to look at two stories involving Jonathan. We're going to look at the first time that they met, and we're going to look at the last time that they met. And we'll pull a few things out which the Bible tells us are really important aspects of Christian friendships. The first thing we're going to look at is 1 Samuel chapter 18. So if you've got a Bible, you might want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 18. Now, 1 Samuel chapter 18, you might not be surprised to know, comes immediately after 1 Samuel 17, which is the story we looked at last week. So Rob talked us through David and Goliath. So David's defeated Goliath. He's chopped off his head. He's got his head, and he's come up to Saul, and Saul has said to him, whose son are you? And he tells him whose son he is. And then this is immediately after. So for all we know, he's still holding Goliath's head during this little story we're going to look at here. 1 Samuel chapter 18, beginning in verse 1. It says this. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of his robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. The first thing we're going to see about a Christian God-glorifying relationship is this idea of identification. Both of these men knew what it was to be in battle. David and Goliath were now the two most celebrated warriors in the whole of Israel. They've had the greatest victories in the whole of Israel. They both knew what it was to be in situations where the odds, humanly speaking, were completely against them, where they had to rely fully on God to give them the victory. And they'd both seen God come through for them. Here's the first point I want to draw out tonight. If you're a Christian tonight, then I think you'll know that there are battles that you have come through, which your non-Christian friends, your friends who don't know Christ, are going to struggle to understand. They're just not going to get some of the battles that you've been through. There are battles that you might be facing just now, which aren't battles that they're going to be able to relate to, or you're going to be able to talk to about them. There are certainly battles in your future that they are not going to understand. There are battles in your future in terms of perhaps sin that's in your life that you're going to have to battle to get the victory, to glorify God. If you move into a relationship, or if you're in a relationship now and you want that relationship to be a God-glorifying relationship, then that is going to be a battle in your future. A battle is to do with your thought life, a battle is to do with how you raise your children in a God-glorifying way, a battle is of how you glorify God in your workplace. Countless battles that lay ahead of you, and when they come, it is such a gift from God to have a Jonathan with you, to have someone who has been through similar things, who has been through similar battles, who understands in the first place why the battle needs to be fought and not just ignored and not just let it go. Someone who's able to remind you that God fights with you and that God can give you the victory. To have this identification with someone who is going through the same thing, who knows what it is to live for God and to have to battle. I think that's a hugely important thing that we see in the Bible that needs to be in our friendships. The second thing we see is this: there is a level of vulnerability. When he was with David, Jonathan took off his armor. I don't know about you, but I certainly have armor that I have on, not physical armor, obviously, but we have armor, I think, each of us, that we put on. Armor that we wear that stops us from being vulnerable with people. Things we don't want others to know that might be used against us. We all do this. We all have a front that we put up that the world sees. Even when we come to church, you might have had the worst week possible. You might have had the worst morning possible. But as soon as someone says, "How are you?" Fine. Always fine. You might have just been hit by a bus. You come to church, you're still fine. For all people to know. We all have armor, but the question is, do we have someone with whom we can take off our armor? Who you can be brutally honest with about how you're actually doing, how you're doing spiritually, how you're doing emotionally. Someone who you give permission to poke around and ask the difficult questions and challenges on different areas. I think that's an important part of a friendship. Proverbs 27 says this. It says, "Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy." It says that there'll be people who compliment you. There'll be people who are actually your enemies, who will say nice things to you and let you off with anything. But a real friend at times will give you wounds. A real friend at some points will give you those kind of godly punches in the stomach, those godly punches in the face that remind you, that ask you the difficult questions and will bring you to difficult places. In Christian friendships, they should display this kind of taking off of the armor and the honesty and openness and the vulnerability that comes with that. So we've got this idea that we have to be able to identify with each other, that we're vulnerable with each other. The third thing that we see in this particular wee story is that Christian friendships have a level of sacrifice to them. Not only did Jonathan take off his armor, he took off his royal robes. This was a prophetic act, signaling that David would take his place as the next king. This is something that Jonathan reiterates time and time again through 1 Samuel. He keeps on saying that David will be the king, the next king, instead of him. That God has given David the kingdom. He even says that he'd be willing to serve David and stand at his side and serve him as David is the king. This is part of the reason why their friendship is so incredible. For as far as anyone could see, the most likely thing that would happen would be that these two people would completely hate each other. These are the people, Jonathan is the person who had most to lose by David being successful and appreciated and loved by the people. So you'd think that Jonathan would try and bring him down and isolate him, but yet what we see instead is the fact that time and time again, Jonathan's words and actions are protecting David, they're encouraging David, and they're lifting David up. Christian friendship is sacrificial. Jonathan prioritized his friendship with David over his own position, over his own wealth, and over his own future prospects. Similarly, I believe that our relationships are more important to God and more important to the kingdom of God than our status and our personal success. How many of us, I wonder, used to be in a prayer cell or a prayer triplet? How many of us used to be in a small group and attend a small group? How many of us used to have this kind of deep friendship with another Christian, but yet actually we've just become busy and work has become more and more demanding and we've seen these friendships fade and we've stopped attending prayer cells or small groups. Things just got in the way and we didn't prioritize these relationships. To have a God-glorifying Christian friendship, it requires sacrifice. So we've got these three things. Sacrifice, vulnerability, being able to identify with each other. That's what this first wee story tells us. We're going to move on now. Look at the second story. And the second story is in chapter 23, if you want to flick there. Before we read from chapter 23, let me just tell you what's happened in between 18 and 23, because there's quite a lot of plot that we've missed out on. Basically, King Saul has become insanely jealous of David because the people love him. And although God's spirit has left Saul, every time Saul looks at David, he sees God blessing and the spirit moving through David. And everything that David does is just going incredibly. And so Saul becomes insanely jealous. We see that David has married Saul's daughter. To marry Saul's daughter, Saul said, "You have to pay me to marry my daughter, and you have to pay me 100 of my enemy's foreskins." And that's what David goes out to do. He brings back 200 enemy foreskins. Saul had in his mind that David would be killed trying to fight so many foes. But yet, David goes out and he has success, and he comes and he pays the payment, and he marries the king's daughter. We've seen that David is able to survive three of Saul's assassination attempts. And thanks to Jonathan, he's able to escape and go on the run. David is then on the run for about 10 years, hiding from Saul as Saul hunts him down. And the passage we're about to read here, Saul is getting very close to hunting David down. As I said before, this is the last time that David and Jonathan meet. 1 Samuel chapter 23, starting in verse 15. David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this." And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. The fourth thing I want to pull out from the relationship of Jonathan and David is that Christian friendships, God-glorifying friendships, involve encouragement. Jonathan strengthened David's hand, it says, in this time of trouble. Christian friendships should be friendships that encourage us in our darkest times. I know that seems obvious, but some, even Christian friendships, are not like this. Some of them just involve people getting together to moan and to talk about how bad things are for them, and someone listens to how bad things are for the first person, and instead of doing anything about it, they say, "Oh, things are really bad for me too. Let me tell you all about that." And it just becomes depressing conversations and talk shops about everything that's going wrong we see here that in David and Jonathan's friendship, the focus is instead on the promises and the faithfulness of God. The focus is to remind themselves that God is in control. Jonathan doesn't deny the problems are there, but he reminds David of what God has said. He says, "You will be king over Israel." This is why we continue to meet as a church community, for encouragement is one of the main reasons. In Hebrews 10, we read this. The writer of the Hebrews says, "Stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another." The Christian life was never made to be lived in isolation. We read that iron sharpens iron, and we read that we should be stirring one another up and encouraging one another. Encouragement is a hugely important part of a friendship. The last thing we see is this: Christian friendships are committed. It was one thing for Jonathan to make these vows and to make these covenants when everything was going well, when everyone was on the same side and David and Saul and Jonathan were all together and united. It's easy to make promises then. But the circumstances of the second story are hugely different. Jonathan is having to risk his own life and defy the king to go and see David to encourage him. Christian friendships are not fair weather friendships. They remain through good times and bad times, through conflicts and struggles and everything else. In the case of David and Jonathan, this friendship went on even after death. At the end of 1 Samuel, Jonathan is killed in battle, and David mourns him, and David writes this incredible song that you'll find at the beginning of 2 Samuel, a song where you get the expression, "How the mighty have fallen," as part of the song, and it's written about the falling of Jonathan. He mourns him, but more than that, David takes on Jonathan's son. He had a crippled son, and David takes him, really as his own son, to live in his palace and to eat at his table and to be at his side, just as he wanted Jonathan to be at his side. In Christian friendships, there is a need for commitment through all circumstances. There are a few things we can apply. There are a few ways we can apply the lessons of Jonathan to our life. I would suggest that praying for a Jonathan to come into your life isn't the main thing we have to take from this passage. I came across this great quote from Alan Redpath, who's a pastor and a writer. He says this: "When I think of that story, my heart is stirred by a desire, not only that I might have a Jonathan in my life, that is surely very wonderful, but very selfish, but also that I might find a David somewhere to whom I could be a Jonathan." Instead of us thinking of how we could have a Jonathan come into our life, I think the main prayer point here is, "God, help me to be a Jonathan. Help me to be someone who can identify with others. Help me to be someone who is vulnerable with others, with other Christians and friends. Help me to be someone who sacrifices for my friends, who encourages my friends and is committed to my friends." Ask that God would help us to deepen our Christian friendships and increasingly show these qualities in them. If you don't yet have Christian friendships of any kind, then I'd encourage you really simply to get involved in a prayer cell or to get involved in a small group. The church has loads of small groups. There are things that you can do that can start this journey for you. The last thing I want to say is this: as we come in a few moments to share communion with each other, let me say that although the character of Jonathan shows us an incredible picture of friendship, the most perfect picture of friendship is shown to us in the character of Jesus Christ. In John 15, Jesus comes to his disciples and he says, "I no longer call you servants, I call you friends." And Jesus is the ultimate example of what a friend should be. He can identify with us. In Hebrews 4, we read that he is not unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but he is one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then come with confidence and draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. He can identify with us. He is vulnerable with us. He came as a child. He came as a baby into our world to live in poverty and to be with the poor and to weep with the downcast. Jesus is the ultimate example of being sacrificial. Again, in John 15, Jesus says, greater love has no man than this, than that he would lay down his life for his friends. And yet that is what Jesus has done for us. Jesus is an encourager. He meets us in our darkest times and reminds us that he is with us to the end. And Jesus is committed to us. Jesus has shown us that there was nothing he would not do to save us, and that even death was not strong enough to end his love for us.